If you haven't had a chance to tune into the first part of this two-part series, make sure to check it out and then come back and listen to part two of the interview with ADHD coach Abraham Carrion.
Hi. Sorry.
That was a big breath. Then.
I just say and a cough. I'm still dealing with the bronchitis cough. Hey, it's Yesenia, if you haven't noticed by my lovely voice.
And I'm Leela.
And today we have a special guest, my brother Abraham Carrion. An ADHD coach who came to talk to us about his specialty.
Yes, hi, Leela Yesenia, thank you for having me.
Hola, Abraham. Hola. So excited to hear what you have to share with us today.
Stay to the point. Yeah. No, you know, this month is Hispanic Heritage Month, and we really want to, obviously, we want to celebrate the beautiful things about our heritage, our culture, and spread the love and share it all because it is something that I'm very proud of, that we're all very proud of, obviously. But we also want to make sure that we touch on subjects that don't get talked about in the Hispanic culture, and very important topics. So this is the reason why we are going to be talking about ADHD mainly, but mental health in general. So yeah. Stay tuned for our lovely episode today.
As a group of Latinas from the southeast side of Chicago, we created this platform because,
well, we just have something to say. Join us for laughs, cries, the ups and downs, and a little bit of tea.
Or café. So grab your café con canela.
Or coffee.
And let us be part of your Wednesday morning. Café con canela.
I mean, I'm gonna admit, I'm sure you can tell, I get very uncomfortable talking about mental health. Mm-hmm. Very uncomfortable. I think it's just because we don't talk about it. So, you know, we're all Latinos here. We all come from Hispanic households.
Well, duh, you guys are siblings.
You too.
You too.
How did you know that?
It's not a topic that's ever talked about. Maybe in your household, very briefly, just because your mom went through stuff.
Yeah.
But that's it, probably. And you never probably even
But my knew. Dad, I don't know, maybe because he is from another country. I don't know how they handle it there. But I know growing up, he kind of downplayed my mom's situation and was just like, oh, she's just, without saying she's weak, he would say she was weak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we were just like, we didn't know anything about it. Like, control your thoughts. Like, control your emotions. Like, kind of man up a little bit.
That's over it.
Yeah, like, why are you so sensitive? Like, that's the way we saw her. Yeah. She's just so sensitive.
Yeah.
So, but again,
why do I remember you saying that? She's just so sensitive. Yeah.
Well, because she is, even now, we do have to watch what we say because anything, a lot of things, she's easily triggered.
Mm-hmm.
She's easily triggered, even though she's, like, you know, she takes her medication, she is still just easily triggered. So if I say, like, I don't like that color shirt, she takes it very personal.
Yeah.
She'll be sad for a while because she takes it personally. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like the color of the shirt, but she picked it because she liked it. So that means I don't like what she likes. That means I'm saying she has bad taste. And it's like, no, I just didn't like the color. You know, so we just, I keep my opinions to myself. But I think because she felt she was not treated when she was younger, like her mom's from Mexico, you know, so I don't know if she knows anything being here.
Right.
She did put a lot of blame on my grandma. Like, she should have gotten me help when I was younger, when I needed it. Mm. Instead, you know, I don't know when my mom started taking medication for depression. I'm not 100% sure if it was before we were born or if it was after. But that's when she started, you know, when she was diagnosed and as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And she just feels like it would have helped her a lot if she knew what was going on when she was younger.
Yeah.
So then when it came to me, I don't have depression, but I have ADD. I don't know if it's been mentioned before. She didn't hesitate.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't hesitate to take me to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as a child, she just thought, like, this girl is just very, like, opinionated and just wants to do her own thing, and she just, and she's all over the place. Like, she just thought, okay, she's just super independent. But when I was in first grade, my first grade teacher is the one that told her, like, I suggest that you get her tested for ADD. Mm-hmm. And my mom had no idea what that was. Mm-hmm. She had no clue. She was just like, what is that? Right. And so the teacher just kind of explained to her, like, these are some of the, like, I don't know, are they symptoms? Not symptoms.
Symptoms,
but,
symptoms.
Well, yeah, like, she's like, and my teacher, my first grade teacher, Miss Lieberson, she was an older woman. Mm-hmm. You know, she was older. So she was like, I've been doing this for so long, so I've seen so many kids who have this. Mm-hmm. So, and she falls into that category. So, like, I would just go get her tested. So, I think they did it differently than they do now, because moving ahead, I think my children have it, but not as severe, you know, like, well, whatever. And I remember with them, they didn't really test them. They were just like, okay, well, let me just ask you some questions. And if you get a certain number of yeses, then okay, they got it. Here's meds. I don't, you know, like, I...
Did you have to actually do, like, testing, like...
No.
A paper or anything? Or no, you...
For them? Oh, for me, I don't know. I was in first grade.
Oh, gotcha.
But my mom said that it was, like, they tested. Mm. They tested me, I guess she said. Because, yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I mean, I was diagnosed in first grade. Mm. And I was on medication until I got pregnant.
So, Abraham, tell us a little bit about how you found out that you had ADD, or how you found out that you...
I think whether it's through, you know, we touched on the subject about kind of like through being raised kind of in cultural or, through different situations, you know, I had no idea. I guess in a sense I've always had an idea, you know. I will say right off the bat, I got diagnosed last year and, at 33, right at the end of July. Although it was something that I've known for a while, something that I've known as far as just like of a sense of just like feeling.
Like, and something's like going on.
For sure.
And something that I knew, and just because the only reason I knew the word was because of you and Carlos. And I'm like, oh my God.
And I had no idea.
Like, I we were saying, but I just thought it was nothing. I'm like, oh yeah, Abraham's like that. Abraham's
like that. Yeah, like I remember being young. Like, you were just active. Like
literally, and I could tell those stories later on, but we thought they were funny.
Yeah.
We thought they were funny, and it was just, you just very energetic.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah. I knew, from, I guess, my recollection of kind of being very young, and I would say, like, pre-adolescent, like, before I started being of age of kind of interacting socially in school and stuff like that, you know, I do remember kind of being very, very hyper, very fidgety, you know, I know through you, you're saying you used to tell me stories about how I used to kind of rock myself to sleep, you know, but...
Rock us to sleep, because I used to sleep on his bed, and they used to put me to sleep, because he's the rocker.
But didn't you say Jose used to rock also?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure our family, Jose and Annabelle used to rock themselves to sleep every night on the couch. And again, the sound, I used to sleep in the bedroom next to them, so... The sound would put me to sleep. So when Abraham started doing, I started sleeping on Abraham's bed, and like the rocking would just put me to sleep.
Yeah. So I don't know. I always felt, I guess, kind of out of place. I always felt like didn't have a sense of kind of like not belonging, almost, in a sense, because of being very hyperactive as a youth. You know, by the time I was in school, I internalized everything, whether. I remember like being like in Mexico and just, some of the cousins, and I used to get teased a lot. You know, they used to tell me like, oh, like Abraham se tiene el diablo. You know?
So bad.
Yeah, so
yeah,
please, judgment free zone, guys, right now, okay? We were all young. Yeah. We didn't know. Okay, so here's the thing is with Abraham, and I'm going to just say this because I want to explain why we would say that.
It was crazy. All over the place.
No, but see, he had this anger, and it's,
yes,
it's anger, and
Alex is the same way.
And he would get,
I said, just not being able to express my
emotions.
But at that age, and to everybody else, it was like,
he was like 3 years old, 3, 4, 5 years old. We were not that much older. Like, I was probably like 7 or 8.
Probably, yeah, probably, yeah, like, yeah, shit. Yeah.
But he would get really angry and didn't know how to express himself, would turn really red, like red, and get this strength out of nowhere. Like, it was crazy. It was ridiculous. Like, what the hell? Like, he'd just get so strong all of a sudden. And he'd either be punching us or choking us. At one time, he was choking me. And it was because, Jose had to get him off me. Or things, you know?
I mean, I do, remember, the feeling. It was almost like an out-of-body experience. Yeah. Like, I really had no control of I just lost it. But I think at some point, I just identifying with that and just being like, okay, that's not right. So I kind of internalized. So by the time I was in grammar school, I was complete opposite. Shy, did not really,
And that's what I was going to ask him. Because, my first grade teacher is the one that brought it to my mom's attention. Like, I'm surprised that none of your teachers brought it to your parents' attention. But you just said, by the time you got to school, you were
more quiet. I wasn't disruptive.
I was the other way around. I was disruptive. And
so I always felt, because at the same time, I was still internalizing all this. So you just don't, I learned how to suppress my emotions. So I just learned how to hold it.
Well,
no.
No,
it's not. That's not good.
Now all this is kind of
what. Which is crazy. Not crazy. But that's what my son does. Because my son doesn't get in trouble for disrupting the class at all. Like, he's just super hyper. In school, he just doesn't participate at all.
So
he just doesn't answer.
See, and my kids are all, they've always been the disruptive ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I've always, okay, it's okay as long as they're not being bullies, as long as they're not being hurtful or whatever.
In a sense, that's releasing the tension, releasing the energy, which I used to do, but then I kind of identified with it. It's just they're calling me the devil while I'm doing this. So we're just don't do that. Mm-hmm. So I still, that
but,
energy
but
then, needs to
I'm
go somewhere,
it's
right?
Good is that you were able to rationalize that. Because he was able to control.
So something I guess I learned along the way, someone who's got ADHD is not really being able to have those coping skills to be able to tie with okay, the risk reward situation of this happening, this is going to be the consequence of this, of this action is going to then, now this will happen. But I guess in my journey, so I completely internalize everything. And it wasn't until, I guess, over the last few years, now I've gotten to my 30s. A little bit before that, I'd kind of geared towards towards youth development. And I think that was just more internalizing. I was lost. I always felt like I was needed some guidance. I didn't know what I was going to do, where to go. And I didn't feel like I had that type of support in the sense of that clutch or that kind of someone just to help give me that sense of direction. So I think in the path of kind of really just I was just kind of going through the motions, living in autopilot, probably just through my late teens, through all of my 20s, but finding a sense of direction, in the sense I know this is what I want to do, and help other people who don't feel like they have a voice to kind of give them a sense of direction. I always had a lot of passion to do things, whether it's play sports, basketball, but I never had the confidence to be able to try out. So again, I wanted to be able to help bridge that gap for other people. So I started coaching, and then I started getting into running sports programs for kids. And in that, there was a moment where one of the youth, I'd built very good relationships with some of the youth. I was a gym teacher, but I would only see them for 40 minutes a week. I would see hundreds of kids. I was working with pre-K 3 to 8th grade. And for 3 years. And so I kind of built pretty good connections with some of the youth there. And some of the schools that they had me working with are just more with a lot of the youth were behaviorally challenged. The schools were underfunded. So they needed a lot of structure. And they were kind of, a lot of the youth were labeled the troublemakers.
But
there was just one time one of the coaches that I was working with, you know, I kind of gave him a heads up, but I didn't feel like empowered to be able to be in the, even though I'd been there for a long time, and I'm just like, hey, like, just be mindful of like how, you know, this was like a, you know, a white male in his 40s, and I'm just, you know, the youth that I was working with were predominantly Hispanic or African American. And I'm just like, just be mindful of kind of your approach and how you talk to them. And just like, they're not going to respond if you're just very authoritative. And he was just someone who was very authoritative.
Yeah.
And just like a third grader, just finally, just is like, he was just like yelling at her. And she just got in his face like, man, fuck you. Like, you don't know what the fuck I'm going through.
Third grader. That's crazy, dude. Like,
so for me, that was just like, okay, I need to like, I felt like I needed to like get in, like, I wanted to get more involved. So that's kind of my path about how I ended up in social work, working in a residential treatment for at-risk youth, which I found in 2017 at Mercy Home for Boys and Girls. And it was through, I worked with the youngest youth there, the 11 to 14 year olds. And a lot of youth there through also coupled, you know, with the trauma that they had experienced with a lot of these mental health conditions, you know, they have a lot of, you know, behaviors that you would see in 3 and 4 year olds, you know, throwing temper tantrums, yeah. But as 11, 12, 13 year olds, they just don't know how to respond in certain social situations. And so it was really through them that the connection that I made with them that made me kind of start reflecting on kind of my experiences and really gave me a sense of curiosity about just like, shit, like, I'm exactly the same way. So that really was the beginning of kind of me exploring my own mental health conditions, making a connection through the youth that I was working with there.
Yeah.
I know you said that that's kind of like where it led you, where you wanted to explore, I guess, your situation. Is that when you decided, you know what, let me go talk to someone, you know, or no? Or
yeah, where did you start? Did you just go to the doctor?
It wasn't, like, no, I don't know. I think it was more of a curiosity of, it's hard to really to pinpoint one exact, like, moment or, like, a step, because I had no idea. I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. Making a connection with the youth more, a sense of just, like, yeah, they're very disruptive, or they're having a hard time kind of just, whether it's that, here, let's just use a situation, a hypothetical situation, like during study time or something like that. And, they're not willing to give, you know, they're just completely, they don't want to do this work, you know. Being able to make a connection in the sense of just like, okay, like, what's really going on? Like, okay, like, you might not understand it this way, but, or just, you just like, dude, like, you're not dumb, you're not stupid, or you're not bad, you know, you just might not understand it, and that's okay. This is the way you're expected to do it. Okay, you don't understand it this way, but maybe if you try to look at it this way, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a homework situation, but I'm just using that in as an example. It's just like, okay, you might see things a little bit differently. And it was more in the sense of just kind of like, hey, I was just the same way, you know, went against the grain, or I didn't stay in the dots, you know, but so like, it's nothing wrong with that. So, and then there'd be times where it would just be like, oh shit, like, that makes sense. And then you just really see them work, and you can really see like their genius. So I was able to be like that in some form of just like, okay, like, that was just me.
How long have you been at Mercy Home?
I started in May of 2017.
Okay.
So then I think like the first thing, I started being curious more about personalities and kind of how people's different tendencies or personalities. So I always thought I was socially awkward. I think I was like at a bar one time and like some, you know, I was making an attempt to like an approach someone there that I was interested in, and I got called socially awkward. So I like literally, I remember I googled, I'm just like, almost in a sense of, am I socially awkward? So I came up on this word introvert, you know, and this was like the first time I made, as far as the label of the, I'm just like, holy shit, like this, I can relate to this. I was almost just like excited in the sense of like, oh, well, like I fit it. Like, this is me. This is
category.
So once I identified kind of my personality as an introvert, that was like the beginning, like kind of steps. And then, I had no idea what ADHD was. I knew the youth had, you know, ADHD, but like you had said, you know, constantly before, whether it's through deflecting or not want to deal with our own shit, you know. But that kind of gave me in the path of just to kind of really digging deep and really digging. So there was that, and then I, at one point, maybe a couple years, 2 years ago or so, I was with my primary care doctor, and I just kind of talked about a lot of my anxiety and the symptoms that I had, and they're just like, oh, they referred me to like a neuropsychologist, and they're like, you know, you might have ADHD, and so that was like the beginning of the path of kind of assessing.
And I know I briefly asked it earlier, and sort of, I know Lila said she's ADD, you're ADHD. What's the difference?
The age? Hyperactivity?
No, not the age. So ADD, so Lila also mentioned it kind of about how things are a little bit different now as far as the testing. Right now, the way you're generalized assess for it is called what's a self-report of what's called the DSM-5 right now. I have so many issues with that as well too, because now you're relying on a self-report from someone who well, if it's untreated, you're gonna be untreated in the sense of you're an adult with ADHD. You've probably insecure, you're been living like in shame, and so a lot of the questions that you're being asked of are really to like, okay, identify with some of these personalities that you are really ashamed of. So now you're relying to, like, I guess more of the issue, not the issue, because ADHD or any mental health condition in a sense is just, now you're talking about a psychological condition in the sense of you really don't know how someone's brain operates. You know, I can get on a scale, you can tell me the weight and be like, okay, you're obese, so like let's make a plan to treat that. Or, you know, if someone's got, you know, I can take an x-ray about just like, okay, you got some broken bones or, you know, these things, but you really can't tap into someone's mind. So now you're relying on a self-report. And so that's why there's a lot of like uncertainty around it. Because of that, you know, ADHD, if it goes untreated or mistreated, can get more severe ties towards, you know, you want to call it like brother, sister, you know, of autism, dyslexia, bigger, you know, if it's untreated, like those things get tied or lead to, now you're talking about bipolar depression, BPD, bipolar, being bipolar, insomnia, personality disorder.
And like you mentioned earlier, people get diagnosed with just anxiety, depression, and
because I think your initial question was like, what's the difference between ADD?
So
ADHD is categorized right now into three different, well, it's broken down into three different categories, which is hyperactivity, impulsivity, and attention. So the ADD, attention deficit disorder, strictly ties to the inattention category. So right now it's all like tied in together. So I got diagnosed with combined type, which is inattention tied predominantly with hyperactivity and impulsivity. Generally, someone who's got ADHD, in a sense, has underlying symptoms of all the categories. But now the way it's now tested is through these three different categories affecting you in whether it's, you know, school, home, social settings, and work. It's just like everyone's, all right, so I don't want to differentiate, be kind of, these are symptoms that everyone has. Everyone loses focus, and in a sense, everyone has feelings of anxiety and poor attention and impulsivity and hyperactivity. But now when we talk about, are they really affecting your way of living? So ADHD is in a chemical imbalance where due to these symptoms in these three different categories, affect your learning ability or development in day-to-day situations to learn how to cope and navigate certain day-to-days and through, again, these three underlying categories.
Gotcha.
So inattention, if you're just strictly inattention, that would be what's categorized or before, because it's not necessarily just ADD anymore. It's all one and the same, but you're just inattention. You have ADHD, categorized in the inattention category, or you can be the hyperactive impulsivity category or combined type.
Well, and now you have decided to even change your career path in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of coincides with what you were doing at Mercy Home.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us a little bit about that change.
Yeah, again, kind of going back to last year when I got that information, you know, I got my, and again, this is a good sense of something that I've known for a long time, feeling different, but I knew kind of how, having played out a lot of, like, just kind of how I thought things, and I was, like, very, having these dooming thoughts and kind of the insecurity that I had, like, you know, very, and you know, we talked about, you know, when I was younger, having these emotional outbursts, so kind of like having, they didn't go anywhere, you know, they were just playing out in my mind. So it was, when I got that information, it was an emotional roller coaster. I remember I did send a message. I don't remember if it was that day. It was literally, I think, you know, I go and they give you this report, this assessment, mm-hmm. everything that you kind of do the testing. And I know I did mention that it was just a self-report, but after you do the self-report, as far as the testing, you go through kind of like cognitive testing and how your mind responds to certain situations on the fly and stuff like that. So it is more extensive, like a 6-hour actual test that you're doing through like their, again, like your cognitive recognition of things and being able to see things and respond to things. And aside from the self-reporting of that. But anyway, once I got this information, it was just like literally, okay, like, what the
now
fuck?
What?
Now what?
Like,
right,
okay.
So like, what do I... So I was just like, really, I was really expecting or hoping that someone would just be like, you know, like, ta-da. Or, you know, or just like, kind of, like I just mentioned, kind of, again, giving me that guidance. I had no idea what the hell...
Right.
So I remember, I think I had ended up messaging, like, the family. And then you said, like, oh, yeah, we always knew that. Like, that could have really helped you out in school. And I'm just like, geez, thanks. Right.
But what's funny is, like, to me, like, I didn't really know what it was at the time. I just knew Lila had it. And I knew that people had it. And I worked, now that I forget about it, I worked at a psychiatric clinic.
Yeah, you sure did.
For a couple months. So I knew, I think what it was to me is, like, I had seen intense. Like, I have seen intense, like, kids that are like, they've had to go straight to the hospital from there because it's like their
that's so sad,
their symptoms are really extreme.
Yeah.
And it's probably because it's undiagnosed for a very long time as well, or it's just,
there's
combined
so many,
with other things, it's combined with
the,
I mean,
trauma,
it's a range. So to me, like, when I see a range that high, and then I see Lila, like, she did good. She finished high school, you know, like...
I finished high school.
Abraham did great. He graduated college. Like, he's fine.
And that's the thing, like, see, with the labels, is everyone used to tell me, like, oh, like, on the surface, you look great. Like, you're fine. Like, Abraham, like...
Right.
What? Like,
yeah,
so,
like, doesn't,
like, you have,
make
no
us weird.
Idea. Like, you have no idea.
No, yeah.
Right. We just, again, you don't know what someone's going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Totally. But again, I think it's because we come
and that's
from
why,
a culture,
for sure,
that
absolutely.
You don't talk about
don't
it.
Talk
like,
about it. And
you don't talk about
so
it. Like,
we sit with... You know, I was just talking to someone earlier today. And, you know, I used to hold groups at Mercy Home with some of the guys. You know, we used to talk about healthy masculinity. And I used... A lot of the time,
very nice.
I would, like, that would be the first question that I would ask. We would talk about rites of passage and kind of just like, but the one question I would ask, like, what does it take to be a man to you? What does it mean to be a man to you? And first thing they always say is just like, you got to be strong. You got to be tough. You don't talk about your feelings. It's just like, you can't, like, don't show weakness. Don't cry. And that's to do, like, we normalize that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, boys will be boys. And that's just stuff that's been passed along for, like, generations. And the women are supposed to be the ones who are nurturing and, you know, so, you know, they would then get to, like, okay, so you're telling me you don't cry, you don't like who, like you don't talk about this stuff. Like, yeah, you know, I talk about it, you know, I always goes down to like talking about it with my female friends, and they're like astonished. It's like everyone is like, oh, you guys do that too, you talk about, you know, you do that too. But again, having that perception, or they're just like having that, just like, we're supposed to be men, you know, we don't cry, we don't do that, we don't share our feelings, we don't, you know. And yeah, you know, a lot of this is just because of this is kind of what we
are taught. That's what we're taught, like, right, that men should be strong and never see them cry. It's a weakness, but yeah, it's a stigma.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's so many stigmas, and I just think that the label is behind it. But at the end of, like, you need to find a way to be able to release that. So when you don't have any way to turn, you're gonna find it in some other form to compensate for, you know, those things that you need, that you're as it is to be human, you know. So, you know, when it's younger, you might find that, you know, we can hyperfixate, or, you know, that is, we might tend to look disinterested in certain things that just don't resonate with us. We don't care about it, so we're might pay no mind to it. And it's frustrating to other people, because they might then see our energy that we put in certain things. And you might see that getting lost in a video game, not being able to put down a book, getting, you know, daydreaming, doodling. So we get lost in those things. But then when you get older, you know, that might turn into, like, you know, finding something to fill that need in alcohol. You know, alcohol might, especially if you're socially, you know, if you have social anxiety,
that's so mean.
You talk about, like, you might have had a moment where it's just like, oh, you know, that made me feel, you know, having the beer, you know,
it loosens you up. And all of this, because that's how I was this weekend. You know what, let me just go take a couple quick drinks.
Yeah.
But and
that's, you know, again, just identifying with something, be able to, that's a clutch. It's just kind of like finding a way to take the edge off, you know. And we'd see that with, you know, watching shows, binge watching shows, our social media. There's so many forms of doing that, you know. So yeah, just having that information, I think, for me, just kind of living out my past experiences, I kind of really saw how I saw things. And having, I think, this knowledge, I realized, and having worked with the youth that I did, that there are so many people kind of going through similar experiences. And I felt kind of still with that background or that idea of kind of wanting to coach or being a sense of guidance or give a sense of direction, helping other people kind of see that as well. Because I really did feel a sense of just being able to see things in a different light, which opened me to so many things that I can't really explain, whether it's through, like, spiritually and just making connection with, and I will say, like, I don't want to get into it, but even before my diagnosis, I had gotten into, like, a lot of more holistic practices, again, like, mindfulness stuff, building schedules, to help with some of these things that I know I struggled with. But then having this information made a connection of literally how things came up to this point and how I operated the way I did, and to continue now to instill those practices that I've learned along the way, and really to move forward with them. And I felt like that's how it's changed my life more like over. It's almost, a lot of people look at me and or kind of tell me that they feel like it's almost more of a transformation of kind of just...
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a transformation in you. I mean, I wouldn't be able to pinpoint it down, like, what it is. But, I mean, I definitely see a calmness in you.
And that's what I think. I feel just having a sense of fulfillment. And just, I feel like, for the first... I feel free. I feel liberated. I feel at peace. And, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, like, I'm kind of jealous. I mean, like... So now, to find that peace. So.
And I think that's been my biggest thing. So, having that and kind of where I was, I really felt that I've had an obligation to kind of, like, help other people towards that who were willing. Because, again, you know, I was in the process of trying to figure this out by myself. So I was really looking for this support So I know that there are people who really kind of want to grow, and but they just don't feel like they don't know, because they're stuck in this loop of kind of not fitting in and not belonging, or they're just a disconnection of from them and, you know, where they are.
And is that what led you to calling the shots?
Wait, is that what it's called? Business?
Calling the shots, yes.
Wonderful.
So where does the name come from, Calling the Shots? I like it, by the way. What does it mean? Where did you get it from?
This goes back to, I don't know, maybe 2016, 2017. I don't know if you... Do you remember Marco, Annabelle's friend?
Yes. I saw him the other day, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't seen him in a while. But, no, he used to ask me a while back. I don't remember if it was like his nephew or cousin or something. He used to, a few times, he'd be like, hey, Abe, like, you know, would you like to coach my my cousin or nephew, whoever that was, you know? He's just like help him out, like, coach him in basketball, you know?
I'll pay you
hourly or so-and-so. But I was just like, no, like, why? Like, who the fuck am I? Like, I don't, like, I'm not a coach. I don't play basketball. Like, I didn't feel like...
Again, you didn't feel like, I guess, like you were...
Right. Why me? Like, there are so many other people that who are actual coaches who would be willing to do this, who would be better suited to do this. But at the same time, like, I liked the idea, you know. So I would doodle, I would put on my phone, just like, oh, like, I would like to have a coaching business someday. And I was thinking that in the aspect of kind of like coaching like basketball, but I was just kind of trying to build, like, doodling by trying to like build this program on my phone, and I came up with this name. I liked that name, like, Calling the Shots. That'd be pretty cool. But then I kind of, when I got into the more in social work and the mental health aspect, you know, and kind of, again, this was before I kind of figured anything out about myself and my journey towards my own mental health awareness, or learning about it, that name always stuck with me. So it was something that's always, it was close to me, that, but having that idea of just like, again, I didn't feel like I was in control. Like, there was this, I saw things a certain way, which weren't reality, and it's just like, who was really in charge, you know? And just not having the idea of just like, you know, I am the one in charge. I'm the one who, like, I'm the one, I call the shots. So that's kind of what...
Calling the shots.
That's right, I call the shots.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. So what will Calling the Shots be? What kind of, like... Basically, you're a coach, like a mental health coach or a life coach, or what would it be?
So, Calling in the Shots in general, it's being like a platform for someone who's got, in the sense of, you know, having underlying ADHD issues. ADHD, like, a lot of people don't know, but with the executive function deficiencies now, you know, having a poor working memory, having trouble with being able to focus, prioritizing, you know, timeliness, all those things, you know, again, I felt like I didn't have nowhere to look where these specific things that I kind of struggled with. So building a platform where we can engage with, kind of like a stop and go for someone to seek that information out. But then being a under that same platform, working with people now one-on-one, ADHD coaching, which would then be kind of doing more practical building, practical steps and goals around specific things that are really kind of struggling you, struggle that you're struggling with, and getting in the way of, you know, your day-to-day. So that will be then more working one-on-one, as kind of accountability relationship, and we're going to work together to build specific goals, understanding what is getting in the way, not why, you know. Don't want to look more into, it's separate from, it's not like it's not therapy. We're not going to delve deep in just the kind of like why things have gotten to the point that they are. That was more the path that you would go to seek therapy and trying to fix something. We're not trying to fix anything. Mm-hmm. We're going to now, some those things are going to come hand in hand sometimes, because you're going to have to
do your own
self-assessment, and but really focusing on the present mm-hmm. and making plans for the future. Mm-hmm. But understanding what this mm-hmm. is, this is what it is, this is what's kind of mm-hmm. blocking and getting in the way, mm-hmm. and building steps towards navigating those okay. behaviors, issues.
And where would people be able to reach out to you to do, you know, I don't know, like if they wanted to do a consultation mm-hmm. or...
Yeah, so right now I'm putting a lot of, as far as information, through my experience and what I know as far as tangible stuff, like this is information about what ADHD is, mm-hmm. Cause I don't have my website built up yet, which will be callingtheshots.com. But you can reach me through Instagram. That's where I'm mostly at, which is at Abraham Carrion. I'm also on Facebook, which is Abraham Carrion. But yeah, I'm mainly operating through Instagram. Mm-hmm. And that's how, you'd be able to find some of the information, most of the information that I'm putting out right now until I'm building my website, right?
Your website is up and running. Awesome. I think that we can all definitely use some kind of coaching in a sense. I know I can. If you want to reach out to Abraham, if you want to find out more about what he does, more about the services that Calling the Shots offers, make sure to look him up on Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah, there's so many resources out there. There's a lot of organizations mm-hmm. that you can find, whether it's through groups, ADHD groups. But there are some resources that can be, you know, very helpful for, you know, people who, whether it's themselves or have, you know, kids who have ADHD. Chad.org is a very big one, which is specifically for children who mm-hmm. have ADHD. And right now, a lot of it with people who are going to school starting up a lot. So a lot of the resources specifically you can find about the kind of ways to cope with children, you know, mm-hmm. going back to school and how to tools to be able mm-hmm. to navigate those things. And then you know, we just came out of a pandemic year, which is difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah.
I think that's the truth. Yeah. But yeah, so definitely let us know if you have any questions for him. We'll definitely want to have you back on, Abraham, once you have your website running, to make sure to talk about that and see how business is going so far. Very proud of you. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sure it wasn't easy to decide to start a business.
No, it's it's a learning experience. We're mm-hmm. taking it one day at a time. Like being, again, it's, I think we should, opening up that conversation
yes.
is very, very, very big for
absolutely.
Us. But no, this was.
I mean, even just in our family, like we don't talk about this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Exactly. It's awkward. Like,
it's uncomfortable. Yeah, it could be uncomfortable.
It could be. And I think that, you know, little by little, we're getting a little better at it.
Yeah, I think it's getting easier.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now that we're getting older and you guys are having children of your own. Like, I think this is gonna just do nothing but benefit your children
mm-hmm.
and their children, because now you guys are opening up this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I specifically with my nephew, I did have a conversation with him months ago, and because I saw this playing out again through the awareness that I have, kind of just like, holy shit, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to make this really short, but there was a point where he was on his tablet and he really wanted me to like play with him on the tablet, but we had set a limit, you know, like you can't have your tablet while you're gonna eat, like you have to eat first, and he didn't do that. But I'm like, okay, like I'm not gonna, you know, fight with him about it. And then when it was just like he ended up getting done eating, he had the tablet with him, he's just like, oh come on, like Theo, let's play. And I'm just like, no. So I wasn't just engaging with that. But at some point he got so frustrated with himself, and he's just like I'm so stupid. And you know, I like stopped them, and because I just saw myself, like kind of again, like how much I would beat myself up. You know, sometimes we're just like we don't listen to our own inner critic. And I like sat him in my lap, and I'm just like, hey, like no, like where's this coming from? And he just kind of like laugh it off, like play it off. You know, 6 years old, 7 years old. You know, I don't know. But like that, having that kind of conversation to himself, he's just like, I'm stupid, because sees it as a mistake. And having to like tell, like whenever you feel like you don't ever talk to yourself about that way, and that's the thing, like we would never treat our people we care about that way, but just like, we don't pay attention to kind of how we treat ourselves and talk about it. But yeah, it's kind of like seeing that play out at someone who's like very young, you know, just like, you know.
And someone so close to you too.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is he remembers that. So he remembers it as dummy. Or maybe it was dummy, or, you know, but he told. I forgot. Oh my God, I was going to tell you. And I think I might have recorded it because I record a lot of stuff, but then I forget that I recorded it. So it's somewhere in my 37,000 videos on my phone. But he was just like, he said something, dummy. He's like, no, I think maybe Ariel might have said something about a dummy, or somebody said something. And then he's like, no, you cannot say that. You cannot say that word to yourself, because DOA said that you can't do that. You're not supposed to do that. So he remembers. I mean, he's paying attention, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's definitely something that I struggle with him. I struggle, you know, trying to figure things out with him. But
it's just the positive reinforcement. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I think kids who have ADHD or ADD, they get labeled as bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're bad kids. Right. Like, they're not bad. And I hate that. Like, I hate that. Like, they're not bad. Like, and so, of course, if they're hearing this, then that's why they act out, right? Because, well, I'm bad.
Yeah.
I've been hearing this. I'm bad because I don't focus, because I don't sit still, because I'm disrupted, because of whatever. Like,
what's the point?
And it's just...
Yeah.
And it's like, why... Like, why do better? Because I'm already bad, you know? Right. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So, like, yeah, they need to hear that they're not bad. And that sticks with them, you know? Like, don't talk bad about yourself. And now he's so little, but he knows, don't call myself dumb. Don't call myself stupid, right?
Yeah, and it's tough, because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, are trying to find those things of kind of just, like, you know, we are wired differently. It's just like such, and trying to fit in a world, it's kind of like constructed, like it's not our manual, you know, it's someone else's playbook. So, yeah, those things end up manifesting, and you do end up, if not addressed, that becomes something, your reality, you know, so you do. Are bad, and then you do think you're lazy, and then it's just like it's a vicious
cycle.
You spiral, and it becomes your reality.
Yeah,
for sure.
If any of that what we talked about today, you feel like you can relate to, or feel that resonates with you, and is affecting your way of living, definitely reach out for help. You're never too old to go. I mean, I think I was like, how the hell am I going to go to my doctor and be like, oh, I think I may have ADHD or ADD. Like, that's for kids. Like, I am like,
not for
kids. Okay, but that's my impression.
I don't want to talk about it. I just had a conversation with mom. Mom's convinced that she's losing her memory. And I'm just like, mom, like, remember when I was living there? I'm like, remember how me scrambling out of the house, always in a rush, always forgetting things.
And that was always
like,
mom.
I'm like, how was that me at 20 years old or not, you know, however old I was. Like that, it meant, like what you're doing right now, what you say that you think you have, like you're, she's just like, no, I'm like really, and again, like I said, untreated, undiagnosed, like it really becomes your reality, and sometimes it can become just like something a little bit more severe.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, mom, like this was me when I was at 20. I'm like, you're telling me I was losing my memory too? Like, do you remember when Jose was in a rush? Mm-hmm. All those just things, like, no, it's just because your mind is somewhere else and you're overwhelmed.
Or because you have so much going on and you're like, easily forget.
Eric gets mad at me all the time. I'm like, I'm running out the house. That's why I'm always, and it sucks, I'm always running late to empty because I forget. Like, in my mind, I said, okay, I just need to get out the house and this. But then it's like, I forget all the other little things that I gotta do. So I don't, and it's crazy.
And again, that we don't know it, but that a lot of that comes with our executive functions, not being able to plan, not being able to organize. All of a sudden, we're in a rush to leave, and then we're overwhelmed, and then we're here.
And I don't
think
you've spoken a complete sentence.
Yes, I did.
You did not. You had like,
just like bouncing
thoughts,
all over.
Half thoughts.
So the way I would explain it the most, I'm just trying to say, is just like ADHD is like having 5 different televisions going on at the same time and not having control of the remote controller. It's just like our focus. So even the name, the stigma of attention deficit, no, it's not that we can't pay attention. It's that we're paying attention to too many goddamn things, and we have no control of where that attention is going. Yeah. A lot of it again, through the chemical imbalance, is out of our control. Now the things with coping and learning the tools to be able to navigate those things to bring us back to
reality.
Yeah, reality. That's what it is.
Yeah. I do. My mom does worry me, and that's a whole another topic for another day, where I definitely think that we need to... It would be awesome if we were able to get our moms on here, dude. What? I know.
It'd be awesome. Like, what, you didn't finish something. Okay,
but in my head, I trust me that the thought finished. It was there.
And a lot of the purpose is, again, my goal is for, like, people who have no idea, our parents and our just to be able to... If it was for me, if I saw what I did at fucking 33 years old, imagine what someone else would be able to see at 65. I know what they're at 69 now, but I don't want to specifically just like talk about our parents and stuff like that. But that's the thing, we talked about culture. It's just like we have this information at our disposal because of our parents gave us the opportunity to be able to do that. And this is, again, this isn't something that you just pick up at the grocery store. I think ADHD, while, you know, Lila's experience was a little bit different, she learned it at first grade through the grace of her fucking, you know, her teacher. Thank God, you know.
Yeah. Thank goodness that your teacher paid, you know.
A lot of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people who went unnoticed and have no idea whether it's through cultural and different, like,
religious. I can think of a bunch of kids in our class that were just, like, they were just bad kids.
But when, bad, you know, kids. And, like, for, you know. For those, it's just, like, again, whether it's boys, we'll be boys. We talked about this is a way a boy's supposed to, or this is a way a girl's supposed to act. This is a way a boy's supposed to act. This is a way, you know, Hispanic is supposed to. We don't talk about that. And it's just, they're like, just, so having that perception that this is just the way it is.
Yeah.
So, like, I probably wouldn't be able to tell you about the other kids in my class because, like, while being on that medication, so I was on Ritalin my whole life. I was a zombie, like just so focused. Like, I would know, like, as I got older, I would be able to tell the difference of when I was on the medication and when I wasn't, right? Because on the medication, it was like, boom, like, give me work. And it's like, you finished your work, give me more, because I was so focused on what I was supposed to do. You get rid of the medication, and it's like one thought leads to something else, leads to something else, leads to something else, leads to something else. And it's like, wait, I just never finished any thought because it leads to something else, you know? It's like a snowball, I see it. So, yeah, like, I could not even tell you what was going on around me because I was just so focused. But, you know, as I got older, the medication had to get stronger because it wouldn't work, you know, and then I wouldn't be so focused anymore. Like, I don't know.
It's so complex, and that's what I mean. Yeah. As far as the misunderstanding of it, or just really unknowing of it, or because the chemical, like, that's what medication is supposed to do, is kind of fill those gaps. You know, someone's got ADHD is what's missing. We lack dopamine. Dopamine is just something that gets us excited to be able to keep our focus and something, keep us there, keep us present. We have these essential blocks that are missing, these gaps, this internal filing system from, like, okay, you got this file. So we have trouble being able to access certain information because we have this blockage of this thing that's not being produced. So medication helps build those blocks, but then there's also, like, the, we're not used to that. So it's just like a different type of, like, response to our body. So also trying, and that's where you get, like, the other treatment of, you know, you have to be able, as far as nutrition and being healthy, because all those other things, that which are essential as well to our well-being, you know, that everybody needs. But
yeah, and that's where, and that's my main point was, if you do feel like you can relate to any of this, definitely seek help. You know, I think in general, every human should be seeing a therapist anyway. I think that everybody should be seeing a therapist. Again, there's a stigma on that too, but that will it's another topic for a whole nother day. And just, you know, start taking control of our lives and of our health, because getting healthy, I know every new year people talk about, like, oh, it's time for me to get healthy, get fit. I'm going to get nutrition, you know, nutrition taken care of, I'm gonna start working out, but we rarely talk about the mental health aspect of it. and getting healthy there is a huge, I think is even more important, because how do you even combat anything else if your mental health is not in place? So definitely reach out for help. Definitely talk to your medical practitioner, your primary doctor. And if you don't know where to go, or, you know, I know insurance is an issue, there are sites, like Abraham said, that you could talk, like if you think that you may be seeing signs of ADHD, that's chad.com, you said?
Chad.org, I believe it is. Chad.org. Which is more specifically through for children, kids. And then another good resource that I really like that I've joined, like, a lot of, they have, like, a lot of, what do you call, like, forums and things that...
have helped you.
Yeah, a lot. Attitudemag.com is a very, very good resource. That's just overall.
And it's attitude, like attitude, like
ADD. ITUDE. Attitude. Yeah. That's probably my favorite resource. But also, I don't have any children, Chad.org is probably one of the more popular ones that people go to.
Got it. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, if you have any questions for Abraham, or just want to hear more about his story, and or even, you know, talk to him about anything, make sure to reach out to him through Instagram at Abraham.Carrion, or Abraham Carrion.
At Abraham Carrion.
Or Facebook. Thank you again, Abraham, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can't wait to have you again. Hopefully, maybe we can even have our parents on here.
An obstacle that...
Right, like, that'd be too emotional.
And because we're all trying to get fit and all, we're not drinking café con canela today, although I do need it.
Sorry.
Nothing but water. Salud.
Cheers. Salud. Happy Hispanic Heritage Month.
Until next time.